Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, showcasing programs from the golden age of radio. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Coming up in this hour, sci-fi. Later on, it's Dimension X from 1951, but first, Lights Out, a story from Arch Obler called The Immortal Gentleman, a CBS episode from the 31st of August, 1943.
This is Arch Obler bringing you another in our series of stories of the unusual. And once again, we caution you, these lights-out stories are definitely not for the timid soul. So we tell you calmly and very sincerely, if you frighten easily, turn off your radio now.
The Immortal Gentleman. A melodrama about something every one of us has thought of at one time or another. If I could only live forever. Our star, Mr. Franco Tone, in Arch Obler's newest radio drama, The Immortal Gentleman.
Beautiful that the hands of the sisters, death and night, incessantly, softly remold again and ever again the face of the soiled world.
Don't be frightened, Joan. Please, don't be. Yes, I know I screamed, but don't be afraid for me. I'm all right, really, I am. No, don't say anything. Just listen. The reason that I screamed, it made me happy.
Oh, what are you
Oh,
talking?
I know it sounds confused, but I can tell you freely now for the first time since I've known you.
Tell me what?
About what happened. Tell you about myself, and then you'll understand, and then we'll both be happy. Remember, you once said you never could be happy with me.
Oh, please.
No, please, don't say anything. If you do, I want to hold you in my arms. And I've got to talk this thing out first. Talk it out from the time before I knew you until a few moments ago when I screamed and frightened you. You know, you were right. I've been a coward. But not of men or things or living. Just of not living. You don't know what I mean, do you? Must I say it? Must I say the word? All right, I will. I've been afraid of death. Yes, believe me, Joan, all my life it was that way. Even as a boy, I couldn't be happy because of him. So one thought was in me all through life. If I could only live forever, if I wouldn't die, if I could only live forever. The thought chasing itself in a never-ending circle. So there was no happiness. And the fear in me was in my face and in my work, and you knew it and everyone knew it, but they didn't know why.
No.
Tonight, the echo of it is still in my ears. I cried out in fear in front of everyone. And I'm going to tell you why I cried out, and then you'll understand me. And why, I say, I'm free and happy for the first time in my life. And, Joan, if it's too strange to believe, just listen patiently. We were sitting in the auditorium, you and I. The politician up on the stage, talking.
And in this coming election, I repeat again, the issue will be clear. An issue made clear by our glorious party. You young men and women...
Sitting there, you next to me, I wasn't listening to him on the stage. I was thinking the same infernal thoughts I thought all my life whenever I was alone. Of him. Him. And then...
Yes, to you. To every one of you here. A challenge that we must accept, face and challenge in turn.
Speaker's voice wasn't the same. I looked up. No, not the same. The other one, an old man, this one young. Couldn't quite see his face, so dark in the hall. Had something happened to the lights? I turned toward you, said, Joan, when did the lights... I stopped. You weren't there. Believe me, not there. Another woman.
Did you speak to me?
She said that. I said, where's Joan?
Joan?
Well, she was sitting right next to me.
Shh.
You have her chair. Where did she... I mean, the young lady who was sitting here, where did she go?
I've been here for hours.
But she was here. Here, I tell you.
Quiet, the speaker. Listen.
The time is past for pleadings. The time is past for petitions. We are representative of youth. And youth is the time for action. So we must act.
The speaker, yes, act. What did he matter? I sat there, couldn't figure it out. You, Joan, where had you gone? Could I have dozed off and you slipped out and this other woman taken your place? Yet... How strange you're leaving without a word. And then... wind. Wind in the auditorium. I looked up. The sky. No roof. A single star and clouds. No roof. Sleep? No, awake. I got up to go.
No, no, sit down. No one can leave.
But my friend...
You have sworn to stay. You must.
I sat down. Sworn to stay? What in the world... I sat down.
You know there can be no compromise. There will be no compromise. For if we compromise, we are doomed as they have always doomed us.
Speaker, what did he matter? No roof on the place. Crazy. How could a roof disappear in a moment without... I said to the girl, where's the roof? What's happened to this place? Where are we?
You know.
No? No. What? Well, I'd get out of the place. I'd find you, Joan. Started to go again with the girl's hand tight on my wrist.
No, don't. You swore to stay.
Swore?
You swore. They swore. He speaks the truth.
But what?
Listen. Listen.
Good, then now, good friends, let us put an end to words. This meeting of ours was destined. For 500 years, destined.
What was he saying? For 500 years, destined. For what?
None of us can say we have moved quickly. For in the meditation of these 500 years has come the essence of truth. A truth that burns bright in the hearts of all of us.
What kind of a political speech was that?
And so an end to words. In this meeting we have spoken words which none dare question. Now the time has come for action which none dare deny us.
The girl leaned close and whispered.
None dare deny us.
Deny us? Deny what? I wanted to yell out just the way I did a few moments ago, but I couldn't. Something about the place, the speaker, people around me. I could only sit there, questions pounding in my head.
Youth is action. Action is youth. We will act together and make ourselves a new world. A better world. Our world.
Meeting over. Everyone getting up. The girl said...
Come with me.
Where?
You know.
I know. Crowd pressing around me. Dark, strange faces. Young, angry faces. None of my friends. My friends? Where were they? Joan, where were you? The auditorium in ruins. As she led me out, I saw that. It was madness. Yet a strangely intriguing madness, so I walked with her. Led me through a door. I could hear voices. She said...
Stand here a moment. I want to talk to you. Tell me, why do you act so strangely? Don't you want to go through with it?
Through with what?
There. That's what I mean. You talk as if you don't know.
I couldn't speak. Stood there.
It's a glorious morning for all of us. We've waited 500 years, some of us, for this.
500 years? What was she... I said, 500 years?
Well, perhaps not you. But I've waited 350 myself.
What? What did you say?
350 years, and now I can't wait another moment. The thought of another empty day suffocates me.
Am I insane or you?
Insane? I don't know the word.
Out of your head. You or I?
You are a strange one. And yet you came here. Why?
Well, to hear a speech?
So, to hear but not to act, eh? You will. You will. All of us will.
And then... the moonlight from under a cloud. And then... her face. I saw her face clearly for the first time. Hers was a loveliness beyond the word. 16. 17. She couldn't have been more. Freshness... of the morning. And yet her eyes, old, bright, wise. So strange, her old eyes in that young face. I stood there, staring at her.
I tell you this, if one of us fails, we all fail, and that can't happen. Remember that. Now come, they're waiting.
Followed her. A room, quite dark. Many people in it.
Quiet, please, quiet. There is little time to waste. We will now draw lots. Each of you take a paper as the box is passed. Most of the slips are blank. Only 24 are numbered. Whoever draws a numbered slip stays. The others go.
Slips? Draw lots? What was this? Draw lots for what? Someone came close, held out a box. The girl said...
Take a paper.
I did. She did. The others did. She said...
Look at the slip.
I did. A number. 11. She said...
Good. I too.
Held out the paper in her hand. I saw the number 12 on it.
You and I. You and I.
She and I what?
All those without numbers leave. All those without numbers leave.
The push of bodies around me. And in a moment, there were only a few left. The girl at my side, motionless.
Now we can risk lights.
And in a moment, lights began to glow. I stood there blinking, and then I saw 24 people in that room, men and women. 24, I counted them, and all of them looked alike. Yes, alike, I tell you, men and women, and their faces as the girls. 24 faces alike as copies of pictures strung along the wall. They, in turn, were staring at me.
Who is he?
A voice said.
Who is he?
Another said.
I don't know. I've never seen him before.
Who is he?
They came close around me.
Not one of us.
Who is he?
Who is he?
Not one of us.
All those faces alike, staring, talking, staring, talking. The girl spoke. I knew it was she because her hand was on my arm.
Leave him alone. He is an Atavar.
An Atavar?
What was an Atavar? I wanted to speak, but she spoke.
He'll be all right. I'll see to that.
But an Atavar is unpredictable.
Did I tell you he'll be with me? He drew 11. I drew 12. He'll be with me.
But they're undependable. You know that. Never can tell about an Atavar.
But I'll take care
Never
of him.
Never can tell.
I'll take care of him.
They stood there arguing about me, Joe. Yes, arguing about me. Right. Whether I could, whether I would, whether I was reliable, unreliable. And always that word Atavar. Atavar? Atavar? Mad dreams or mad adventure, whatever it was, I didn't know. Their argument stopped. Apparently, the girl had won. The leader said,
All right, Atavar, you'll be with her. Now, all of you listen. This Atavar is with us, and with us he'll stay until it's ended.
Ended? Ended? What had begun and what would end?
One question, Atavar. What is your age?
My age? You want to know my age?
Well, didn't you hear, Atavar? What is your age?
The girl said,
Tell him.
My age is 25.
What did you say?
25.
Do not joke. Tell us your age.
I told you, 25. For a moment, no one spoke. They looked at each other, shook their heads slowly, shoulders shrugged.
An Atavar, just an Atavar.
The girl said,
Don't worry, any of you. I'll take care of him. He'll do as he's told.
Do as he's told? Do what? Told her to what? I wanted to open my mouth. Then I didn't, because the leader said,
All right, our last word. There are 24 of you, 12 pairs. Each pair will go out together. If one fails, the other will succeed.
But when?
Now, at once. We have waited long enough for them. I alone have waited 400 years.
And I 200.
300.
I 425.
I understood. Like a blow on the head, I understood. These people, mad. That was it. Talking of living hundreds of years. Out of their heads, all of them. Listening to them, I knew that.
340 years.
I've waited 170 years.
And that explained the likeness of their faces. Some sort of weird interbreeding of a family resulting in feeble-mindedness. Well, how did I come among them? Went outside. The girl with me. Everyone going off in pairs. Their faces tense, angry. Going off to some strange madness. The girl said,
Wait here. I'll get what we need, then we'll keep our appointment. Wait here.
Joan. Believe me, as she went off into the darkness, leaving me there alone, I swear my head was spinning as if it were on a pivot. And as it spun, the thoughts in my head spun with it.
Madness. Dream. Madness. Dream. Madness. Dream. Madness. Dream. Madness. Dream. Madness.
What was happening to me? And then a thought. Had what I'd feared all my life happened at last? Had I died? Dead. 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 Joan.
Dead.
I remember the wind
dead.
Suddenly was cold about me.
Dead.
But I was...
Dead.
Colder. Dead? Was I? And then someone was standing by me. Not the girl, but a man. Smooth, young, handsome face with those old, wise eyes looking at me. He said...
You have not started yet, Atavar.
No. No.
Strange, I've never seen you before. There are so few Atavars. You know, generally, they are not permitted to develop.
And looking at him, I knew I was alive. Of course. And dream? This was no dream.
Yes, there are so few Atavars.
I said, Atavar? Atavars? What the devil are Atavars?
You are a strange one.
Well, tell me, what are Atavars? Why call me an Atavar?
Well, because you are. You're not like us, you know. You are a throwback to the individualistic, unconditioned, embryonic development.
What?
But then, of course, you don't understand, do you? No, an Atavar wouldn't.
Well, tell me.
It is strange that they should have permitted you to develop and not to have explained to you the difference.
What difference? What?
Once in every 2,000 births, and that means once in every 2,000 years. We don't have many new ones in this world, you know. Something happens in the incubation process, and instead of one of us perfected ones, one of you develops. A throwback to ancient times, an imperfect creature, out of the past. In other words, an atavism. Understand? An atavism.
Atavism? Atavar? Atavism? What the devil's name was this? But he kept talking. He said...
Yet, Atavar, though you are, life must be miserable for you as it is for the rest of us.
Life? Miserable?
Well, of course. Why else would you have joined with us? Oh, this is going to be a glorious night for us. But not for them.
I don't understand exactly what you...
Of course not. Things would be confused for the Atavar mind, wouldn't they? That's the infernal trouble with our minds. Things are much too clear and concise and understandable. And they bred all the confusion out of us a long time ago. Well, now they'll pay for it.
Please, tell me...
Just look at me. I've lived just a handful of years. 250.
He said that, Joan. Yes, believe me, 250 years.
And yet, believe me, Atavar, I'm weary unto the death we'll never know.
Death we'll never know.
What good is there in it for any of us living forever?
Living forever.
For the first 50 years of our lives, they condition us. All right. We come out with our brains filled with all knowledge of all time. Paragons all. Geniuses all. But what good does it do us? What good? Always they are in the way.
They?
Look, Atavar, you can't be so completely a fool or they would never have let you out. They are the old ones. And what is interesting and exciting in the world, they do. They and no one else. And we who came after them, after they conditioned the world against sickness, illness, age, and death, we have nothing left to do.
I see.
They hold the key positions, they. And we stand by and grind the weary years away in nothingness. A world of youth full of the want to do, and there's nothing to do. And yet there are worlds out there where we might go, but again they stand in our way and say, no, it shouldn't be done. They, the old ones, all around us, holding us down, giving us everlasting life, and then giving us nothing to live for. But this night will change it. You and I and the rest of us, 24. Well, here comes your partner, and I must go with mine. Goodbye, Atavar. Good luck.
He was gone. And then the girl at my side, under her arm, a small black box.
All right, we can go now.
She took my arm. We walked along. In almost a moment, we were in a straight, broad street. Straight, shiny, glistening, bright with a light I've never seen. A quiet, empty street. Clean, bright, and strange. As if in a dream. A dream? This was no dream. And then she said...
In here.
We stepped upon a platform. Part of the sidewalk. It was moving, carrying us swiftly. Swiftly down the street. An escalator? Moving sidewalk? I don't know what. Faster. Faster. Things rushing by. Strange towering buildings... And then I heard that she was talking to me.
I saw you talking to Aro. He has the easy one. We've a hard one.
250 years, he said.
Aro? Yes, that's true.
Lived 250 years?
It isn't much, I know. You must be older. Or are you? Hard to tell with an Atavar.
How old are you?
I? 400. 400 years, but not of living.
What do you mean?
You know. They, with all their years. Before we were born, they took the work of the world, and what is left for us? To wander up and down, pretty ornaments with empty lives. But they forgot one thing. They left ambition in us. And this night we'll find a place to use it.
How?
Atavar, you are a fool. You know, and yet you don't know. How can we find a place for ourselves as long as they do as they please? Listen. In the very ancient world, men lived a few years and then died. And they thought that was horrible, but that was good. For when they died, there was a place for youth. Yes. One would fall in his place, and a young one took his place. Sometimes he did better than the one who had gone before, so the world progressed. But now no one falls. No one dies. And so the old ones stay and stay and stay, and we, the young ones, have no place. And when we want to make a place, the old ones say no!
The thing we were riding climbed higher. Higher. And still she talked.
We pleaded and petitioned, and they do not listen. So tonight we act. You and I, Atavar, one of 24.
That's...
By turning back the time to when men died and gave the younger ones their place.
What?
The wrong of each man died with him when he died in that old world. And so tonight we'll see that wrongs are given their belated rest.
How?
You and I, Atavar, we'll do our part up there.
She was pointing up. I looked up to where the building ended, in a cloud.
She sits up there. 5,000 years she's lived every day since the day science shut out death. 5,000 years, but tonight we begin to live. Here.
Into my hand she thrust the black container. I said,
what?
You'll do it. You. In a moment we reach the spire. She'll come out all smiles and happiness. They can be happy, the old ones who have the work. Do it then, you must.
What?
Throw it at her and she'll be free of life and we'll be free of life without living. You'll do it, Atavar, you will. Throw it at her.
Throw it? What? The thing in my hands? What did she mean, to free that person up there from life? The weight in my hands. Then suddenly I realized, some kind of explosive. She expected me to throw it at that person up in the tower. Me to kill.
You will. You will.
No. No. The word tore through my head and with it tore away confusion. I knew. I understood. This was the world of the future where science had doomed the death I feared. Men lived forever. And these young ones had no chance. And now they were out to kill and make their chance. And I was to kill for them, with them.
You will. You will. You will.
No.
You will.
Not
you will.
My world. Not
you will.
Mine.
You will.
Go back.
You will.
I'm saying that.
I will. There she is, the matriarch. Throw it. Throw it.
I won't kill. Not I. I won't.
Give it to me. Give me that. Give me
no.
that.
No.
I jumped. Falling. I was falling through the horrible space of that horrible future. Down and down and down. The glistening sides of the building rushing past me. Down. Twisting. Clawing at the air. Down and down. And then I remembered in my arms that explosive. I tried to throw it, but my hands kite around it. I couldn't unlock them. The ground coming up. I screamed. And there I was. Sitting next to you, in the hall where I'd been before, the politician upon the stage, my friends around me, you next to me, frightened at my cry. And the roof quite intact above me. So here it ends, Joan. Sitting there, I stepped ahead in time until a day when men had conquered death. And so somehow I'm not afraid of him. The one at my shoulder anymore. Because I think it's good that men should live, then die, and so end the evil in them and give their place to others. Tell me, Joan, do you agree?
Beautiful that the hands of the sisters, death and night, incessantly, softly remold again and ever again the face of this soiled world.
Lights Out, Untuned to Yesterday, a broadcast from August 31st, 1943 on CBS. That wouldn't be Arch Obler's first or last time in the world of sci-fi, though he was best known as a horror writer during radio's yesteryear with his Lights Out series. About 2 years after the Lights Out television show hit the air, he came out with a film that's been getting more attention in recent years called The Twonky, one of character actor Hans Conried's only leading roles in film about a television possessed from something from the future. You're listening to an hour of sci-fi on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark LeVonier. Now another story of the future, the year being 1975, on Dimension X, called Time and Time Again, an NBC episode from July 12, 1951.
Adventures in Time and Space, told in future tense. The National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Street and Smith, publishers of astounding science fiction, bring you Dimension X. It happened during a routine skirmish in the Great War. Patrols advanced from the defense perimeter under jet cover and preceded by napalm throwers. The enemy defended in depth and mopped up with guided 98s fired from 40 miles to the rear. The blast area was 10 miles in circumference, and the medics didn't find much to pick up over 500 yards in.
Take it in here.
Where?
Look out, it's lousy with mud.
Okay, man, guide me.
More.
Wait,
cut
right.
Left.
Okay.
More.
Right.
Hold it.
Okay.
Stretchers.
Let's go, boys.
Come on, drivers, get those men out. Yes, sir. Get a move on, line them up. Come on. Easy. You want to kill them? Okay, take it away.
They might have left these Joes where they was. Half of them won't last till the plane comes.
As long as they're alive, they'll be treated. Get out the tags, Travis. Start talking names.
Yes, sir. This one must have been 1,000 yards in.
Get his dog tag out.
What a mess. Here. Hartley Allen, Captain G5, Chem Research, AN73D, number SO2386943J.
Alan Hartley?
Alan Hartley.
I wonder if that could be the Hartley that wrote Children of the Mist and Conqueror's Road.
Never heard of him. Major, I think maybe he's part conscious. Maybe I should give him another shot.
Go ahead, Sergeant. There isn't much else we can do for him. It's a rotten shame.
Ain't it always? Okay, Captain, give me your arm. There.
Get up, Alan. You can't stay in bed all day.
I remember that. Clear as if it were real.
Up and at 'em. Hit the deck.
Remarkably vivid. Strange.
Alan, are you all right?
I'm all right. What's wrong with my voice? It's too high.
What are you doing? Practicing singing?
My voice has changed.
Is that all? You're growing up. Happy birthday, son.
Happy birthday?
Hey, wake up, son. Wake up.
I am awake.
Come on, out of bed.
I don't understand.
Breakfast waiting. Out of bed or I'll turn it over.
All right. It's a dream.
Maybe, but you're wide awake now.
That's the Bell of St. Boniface, isn't it? What day is it?
Are you kidding? You forget today's your birthday?
No. No, I didn't forget.
Neither did I. Here, son. Happy 13th birthday. You won't guess what's in here.
A rifle. A light 22 rifle.
How'd you know that?
I remembered.
Did I spill the beans sometime? I could have sworn it'd be a surprise. Well, go on, open it. Like it?
Yeah. It's perfect, Dad.
I'll be shaving, Alan. Come down to breakfast when you're ready. It's a big day today. You're almost a man.
Almost.
You're still groggy. Snap out of it, Alan.
I will. There's a dream in it somewhere. But I'm not sure which.
What?
Never mind, Dad. I'll be right down for breakfast.
Now for coffee. Mrs. Stauber makes the best in town.
A black for me.
A what? You may be 13, Alan, but they're still a little young for coffee, especially black.
Oh, I wasn't thinking.
What are you going to do today, son?
I want to do some reading this morning, I guess.
That's always a good thing to do. After breakfast, suppose you take a walk down to the station and get me a Times.
Didn't it come?
What, the Times? They don't deliver. Be a good idea, though. Maybe I'll talk to Sam Ashman about it. Here's a half dollar, Alan. Get anything you want for yourself out of the change.
Thanks, Dad.
Finish your milk before you go.
Oh, sure, Dad.
And hurry back. I like to finish the crossword puzzle before lunch.
Here you are, Alan. One times. Tell your father the puzzle's a stinker.
Thanks, Mr. Ashburn.
Look out for the trucks when you cross the highway.
Oh, I'll go across Elton's lot shortcut.
Elton's? You'll have a hard time crossing there, son. There's four buildings on that block.
I thought they burned down.
Seen them this morning, big as life.
Oh, I guess that didn't happen yet.
What'd you say?
Oh, nothing, Mr. Ashburn. I was just muttering.
In my days, youngsters talked up.
Yes, sir. Oh, bye, Mr. Ashburn. Monday, August 6, 1945. Okinawa 1, bombing Japan.
Hey! Hey, Alan, wait up!
Larry Morton. Hiya, Larry!
Hi, Al. Hey, you want to have a catch or something?
No, I have some things I want to do at home.
Wow, get him. Fancy pants talk. Things I want to do at home.
Oh, go chase yourself around the block.
Go jump in a garbage can, will you?
Go take a flying jet to the moon.
Hey, that's a new one. A flying jet to the moon. Hey, you thought up a new one, Al.
Yeah.
Hey, how about us going swimming at the canoe clubs after?
Gee, I wish I could. I gotta stay home. Zafter.
You see the football movie at the Grand? Boy, what a team. Notre Dame.
I thought you liked Cornell.
Cornell? Ha, they couldn't even beat Vassar.
You're going to Cornell, aren't you?
Me? Cornell? Fat chance.
I'll bet you do.
I wouldn't take your money.
I know you wouldn't. You'll go to Cornell, all right.
Cornell. Far above Cayuga's waters, there's an awful smell.
Just the same. You'll go to Cornell. I've got to hurry, Larry.
Well, so long, Al. See ya.
So long, Larry. See ya.
I'm stuck in this corner. A seven-letter word to mix in proportion.
Titrate.
Huh? T-I... It fits. How'd you know that, Alan?
Oh, I read it somewhere, I guess.
Oh. What are you reading now? Tarzan again?
No, not Tarzan.
It's refreshing to see you with a book. Sometimes I think I ought to forbid comic books in the house. Yeah, they must be raising the devil with those bombing raids in Japan.
How long do you think the war in Japan will last, Dad?
Oh, I'd say the middle of 1946. We'll have to invade those islands foot by foot.
I wouldn't be surprised if the war was over very suddenly.
How? By magic? There isn't a thing on earth will make those Japanese surrender. You expect somebody to make a pass and it'll be all over by this afternoon?
That's just about it.
Mr. Hartley, excuse me. Could I see you for a minute?
Oh, hello, Mr. Gutchall. Sure.
That's Frank Gutchall, Dad?
That's right.
Excuse me. Didn't mean to disturb you, Mr. Hartley.
That's quite all right. It's a lovely day, isn't it, Mr. Gutchall?
The Lord's world is always beautiful.
Oh, of course, Mr. Gutchall.
Mr. Hartley, I wonder if you could lend me a gun and some bullets. Huh? My little dog's been hurt and it's been suffering. Something terrible.
Oh, it's too bad.
I want a gun to put the poor thing out of its pain.
Oh, of course. How would a 20-gauge shotgun do? You wouldn't want anything heavy.
I was hoping you'd let me have a little gun. Maybe so big.
A pistol?
So I could put it in my pocket. Wouldn't look right for a godly man to carry a hunting gun through town. I don't hold with killing innocent creatures. People wouldn't understand that it was for a work of mercy.
Of course I understand. You're a very religious man.
The whole world is evil, Mr. Hartley.
Sometimes it certainly looks like it. Well, I have a Colt 38 special from the auxiliary police outfit.
That's fine, fine.
You'll have to bring it right back, Mr. Gutchall. I might be called out.
Dad, Dad, wait a minute. I just remembered.
Remembered what, son?
Aren't there some cartridges left for the Luger? Then you wouldn't be without the Colt.
Hey, that's right. I've got a German automatic, Mr. Gutchall, I could let you have. That way I wouldn't get stuck.
Wait, Dad, I'll get it. I know where the cartridges are.
Well, be careful, son. Well, Mr. Gutchall, it sure turned out nice after all that rain.
Hello, police headquarters. This is Blake Hartley. Frank Gutshaw, who lives on Campbell Street, has just borrowed a gun from me ostensibly to shoot a dog. What? No, he has no dog. He intends shooting his wife. Yes, I'll take out the firing pin. You'll walk home. If you hurry, you can get a man there on time. Right.
Kept you, Alan.
I couldn't find the cartridges at first. I'll show Mr. Gutshaw how it works. It's all loaded, ready to shoot. This is the safety. Just push it forward and up. There are 8 shots in it.
Did you load the chamber, Alan?
Oh, sure. It's unsafe now. You understand how it works, Mr. Gutshaw?
Yes, yes, I understand. Thank you, Mr. Hartley. Thank you, Sonny. Goodbye.
Goodbye, Mr. Gutshaw. Return the gun when you're done.
Yes, I'll be done with it soon. Goodbye.
Alan, you shouldn't have loaded that gun.
I guess it's all over now. I had to keep you from falling with it. Didn't want you to see I took out the firing pin.
You what?
Gutshaw didn't want that gun to shoot a dog. He's a fanatic. He sees visions, hears voices. The voices probably put him up to this. I'll submit that any man who holds intimate conversations with disembodied spirits isn't to be trusted with a gun. He wants to shoot his wife.
What are you talking about?
While I was upstairs, I called the police. I put a handkerchief over my mouth and told them I was you.
You? Why'd you have to do that?
I couldn't have told them. This is little Alan Hartley, 13 years old.
And suppose he really wants to shoot a dog. What kind of a mess will I be in then?
No mess, because I'm right. But you'll have to front for me. They give me a lot of cheap boy hero publicity, which I don't want.
This is crazy, Alan. This is absolutely crazy.
We'll have the complete returns in 20 minutes.
Mr. Hartley, Mr. Blake Hartley?
That's right.
I'm Detective Sergeant Kaborski from Homicide. Here's your Luger.
Thank you.
I don't know how you spotted that guy, but when we busted in, he was pointing that gun at his wife, wearing a blue streak because it wouldn't go off.
Well, I'm glad I was able to help.
They may have some kind of citation, Mr. Hartley.
Oh, I don't think that's necessary.
Well, in the department, we figure a little publicity never hurt nobody. Even a lawyer, huh?
I really prefer to have it kept quiet.
Well, whatever you say, we'll want you to drop around in the morning for a statement.
I'll be glad to.
Well, thanks, Mr. Hartley. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, Sonny.
Goodbye, Sergeant. Why don't you take the citation, Dad?
Well, you were right. You saved that woman's life. Let's see you put back the firing pin.
Sure. There.
Suppose we have a little talk.
But I explained everything.
You did not. Yesterday, you wouldn't even have known how to take this pistol apart. Today, you've been using language and expressing ideas that are outside of everything you've ever known before. Now, I want to know.
Well, I hope you're not toying with the medieval notion of obsession.
What?
You say I'm changed. When did you first notice this?
Last night, you were still my little boy. This morning, I don't know. You've been strange all day. Alan, what's happened to you?
I wish I could be sure myself, Dad. You see, when I woke up this morning, all I could remember was lying on a stretcher injured by a bomb explosion. I was 43 years old, and the year was 1975.
1975? That's right. You'll be 43 in 1975. A bomb?
Yes, during the siege of Buffalo in the Third World War. I was a captain in G5 Scientific Warfare General Staff.
Buffalo? You mean Buffalo, New York?
Yes, there had been a transpolar invasion of Canada. I was sent to the front to check on service failures of a new lubricating oil.
I got hit by a bomb blast. I remember being picked up and getting a narcotic injection. The next thing I knew, I was in bed upstairs, and it was 1945 again. And I was back in my own 13-year-old body.
Alan, you just had a nightmare to end all nightmares, that's all.
I thought it might be that at first, but I rejected it. It wouldn't fit the facts.
But it's ridiculous. All this Battle of Buffalo stuff. You picked it up listening to the radio. All the commentators have been going on about another war after this one. You've just got an undigested chunk of H.V. Calton born in your subconscious.
But that isn't everything. I remember 4 years of high school, 4 years at Cornell, 7 years as a reporter on the Philadelphia Record, 3 novels, Children of the Mist, Rose of Death, and Conqueror's Road. I wrote detective stories under a phony name. I worked in chemistry. You think a 13-year-old can dream up all that stuff?
But it's the only possible explanation.
Maybe, but I can speak 5 languages today that I couldn't yesterday. French, German, Chinese, Russian, and Spanish. Although I've got a Mexican accent you could cut with a knife.
But how did it happen? I can't believe it.
All I know is here I am. I've been reading up on time theories. Nobody seems to know much about them. Evidently, time exists parallel as another dimension. And I've got kicked backwards and somehow.
But how?
It may have been the radiations from the bomb. Or the narcotic injection. Or both together. But the fact remains I'm here with full knowledge of my future identity.
This is quite a shock, Alan.
But you do believe me, don't you?
Yes, I suppose I must. You seem so strange, as if you weren't my son.
I'm your son, all right. The same body as yesterday. I've just had an educational shortcut.
Wait a minute. If you can remember the next 30 years, suppose you tell me when the war is going to end. This one against the Japs, I mean.
Sure. The Japanese surrender will be announced at exactly 7:01 p.m. on August 14th, the week from Tuesday. Better make sure we have plenty of grub in the house by then. Everything will be closed up tight till Thursday morning. Even the restaurants. I remember we had nothing to eat in the house but some scraps.
Tuesday week? That's pretty sudden, isn't it?
Not after today.
What do you mean, what happened today?
Plenty. What time is it, Dad?
11:16.
Is your watch right?
To the second, why?
It'll come at exactly 11:17:40.
What'll come?
The radio announcement.
What are you getting at? Something important on the radio? We'll see.
Don't bother, Dad. It won't work. I remember we had a tube burned out.
Yeah, there is something wrong. What is this announcement of yours?
I memorized it in journalism school at Columbia in 1954. What time is it?
11:18.
They're breaking into the programs now. President Truman has just announced that an atomic bomb has been dropped on the Japanese industrial city of Hiroshima. The bomb was dropped 16 hours ago, and the announcement was delayed to ascertain the results of the explosion. A man named John Howard Peterson read the announcement from the Washington newsroom of NBC.
I don't believe it.
No? Listen. That's the Burt Plate factory whistle and the bells at St. Boniface. Next, the whistle at the volunteer firehouse.
And it's true. It is true.
Sure. Then Larry Morton came by on his bicycle.
Hey, Al, you hear? You hear about the bomb? An atomic bomb.
Yeah, we heard.
Boy, atomic bomb. Oh, boy. I gotta go find my pop. He's on the golf course. Bye, Al. Bye, Mr. Hartley.
You knew. You knew about it.
The next bomb hits Nagasaki.
I thought that stuff about atomic energy was so much fantasy. What? Was that the kind of bomb that got you?
That was a firecracker compared to the one that got me. It was a guided 98, exploded 10 miles away.
And that's going to happen in 30 years?
I remember it.
How about me? Oh, wait, never mind. I don't think I better know when I'm going to die.
I couldn't tell you anyway. I had a letter from you just before I left for the front. You were 78 then, and you were still hunting and fishing and flying your own plane.
But another war and fought on American soil. Alan, wish this hadn't happened to you.
It happened. I remember it. But if I can help it, I'm not going to get killed in any battle of Buffalo.
But if you remember it, if time exists as a parallel dimension, then every tick we're getting closer to that Third World War.
Dad, you know what I remembered when Gutcho came to borrow that gun?
Well, I suppose that you suspected him and warned me.
No, that wasn't it. The other time, the first time, when I was really 13. I wasn't home. I'd been swimming at the canoe club with Larry Morton. When I got home about half an hour from now, I found the house full of cops.
But if the gun didn't fire...
What makes you think it didn't? Gutcho talked the 38 out of you, went home, shot his wife four times in the body, once behind the ear, and used the sixth shot to blow his own brains out.
That's what you remember?
Yes, but now it hasn't happened because I warned you. Dad, I found out the future can be changed.
One man can't change the whole future.
I stopped the murder and the suicide.
I know, son,
but... With 30 years to work, I can stop a world war. I'll have the means.
The means?
Unlimited wealth and influence. I've got a good memory, Dad. Wrote a list out this afternoon. Look at this.
Assault, jet pilot, citation, ponder, middle ground, counter... What is this, code?
Horses! That's a list of Kentucky Derby winners from 1946 to 1970.
You sure?
I learned that list on a bet at the Officers Club in Cincinnati in 1971. Assault paid 8-1. You figure out what we can take in.
Oh, but gambling,
son. This isn't it. Gambling, it's a sure thing. When we get rolling, we'll make the Rockefellers look like pikers.
Assault at 8-1. I suppose I could scrape up $5,000. In 10 years, that'll make a lot of money. Any other little thing you have in mind, Alan?
By 1952, we start building a political organization here in Pennsylvania. In 1960, I think we can elect you president.
Of course, president? Isn't that going a little too far?
Why not? Who wouldn't vote for a politician who was always right? Besides, that's one thing we've got to change. In 1960, we had a man in the White House who was good to his wife and sang a nice tenor. And that's about all. He fouled up so completely, we ended up at war. I think President Hartley might be a little more trusted to take a strong line.
But I don't know anything about international decisions.
I do. I know all the wrong ones. If we can stop a murder, with time we can stop a war.
How do I start?
Well, as I remember, just after that bomb announcement, you got a phone call from the City Fusion Party about the next election.
Well, there is a lot of talk about a reform ticket.
That call is going to be important, Dad. It's the turning point. You've got... There it is.
What do I do?
Answer it. Go ahead.
But, Alan, I...
Don't worry. I'll tell you what to say. Go ahead.
Hello? Yes, this is Blake Hartley. Judge Crimmins? Well, just a moment. Alan, he's asking me to run.
Oh, my head.
Alan, what's the matter? Alan.
Oh.
He passed out. Alan, what do I do now? Alan, listen to me. Alan, what's the matter? Alan.
Captain Hartley. Captain Hartley.
He was all right, Doctor. I gave him a shot and he was all right.
He's dead. All right, Sergeant, make up the tag.
Yes, sir.
Hartley, Allen, Captain. Dead August 8, 1975.
Allen, what happened? Allen.
Huh?
Allen, are you all right?
Hey, Dad.
I've got Judge Crimmins on the phone. What do I tell him?
What?
Alan, are you all right? You passed out.
Sure, I'm all right. Hey, Hey, today's my birthday, isn't it? What did you get me, Dad? Huh? What did you get me?
Alan, are you all right?
Sure, I'm okay. But what did you get for my birthday, huh?
Don't you remember the Third World War?
What Third World War? Gee, Dad, what's the matter? You're looking at me funny.
Judge Crimmins, I'll have to call you back. Goodbye. You don't remember. You're back again, aren't you? Back to 13 years old.
Sure, I'm 13 today. For corn's sakes, Dad.
You must have died up there. It was only a mind transfer. That means now I'm on my own. I have to do it myself without your help.
Help for what? Oh, if it's the grass, I said I'd cut it tomorrow.
No, it isn't the grass. I've got to save your life, Alan. I can't let you die that way in 1975.
What are you talking about, Dad? You sound goofy.
I've got to change it all by myself.
Change what?
Never mind, Alan. You don't know yet. Come on, let's have lunch.
Sure, Dad. Hey, how about my present now? What did you get me for my birthday?
Hey, in a minute, son. Go on in.
Hurry up, Dad.
All right. Now, where'd I put that list of horses?
You have just heard another adventure into the unknown world of the future. The world of...
Dimension X.
Dimension X, on Tuned to Yesterday, an episode from July 12, 1951, on NBC. That same story would be used again on NBC's other science fiction series, X-1, in January of 1956. And so closes this hour of Sci-Fi on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from the golden age of radio. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. It's been a pleasure.